Good evening. This is Bill Blatchford. Welcome to our teleconference today. This is a, I think, a very special call. We are interviewing two of our clients, Dr. Steve Green and Dr. John Kluster of Indianapolis. They'll probably first want to tell us about their football team, but we're going to try and focus on some other things. Steve and John, are you here?
Sure.
Very good. Well, what I'd like to do first off, I want to thank all of the doctors for being on this call and giving up an hour of your evening to be with us. I see we have quite a few time zones involved. We're scattered all the way from the East Coast, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, all the way to Alaska, to Hawaii, to California, to Florida, Texas. They're scattered all over the map. And so we have several time zones here, so I appreciate, especially those in the East Coast, this is getting a little bit late for you. So what I'd like to do tonight on this call, my attempt is to have Dr. Kluster and Dr. Green tell us a little bit about themselves, about their practices. And one of the things I want all of you listening in to do is to identify some of the things about their practice. Of course, your practices are all unique, as is theirs. They are a partnership, by the way. And I want you to be thinking of some questions you can ask them or us. We'll open this up for questions as we go along. So without having me talk a lot, I'm going to ask some questions to John and Steve. And John, I'm going to start with you. Perhaps you could give us just a little bit of background on your practice, how long you and Steve have been together, about your practice, how you found me, what you were looking for when you signed up for coaching. And then after you talk a little bit, I'll give Steve the mic and let you let Steve talk. I should mention that John and Steve are in Indianapolis, and of course I'm here in Oregon, so they already have the mic. They just have the floor, I guess. So, John, why don't you start?
Great. Can you hear me okay, Bill?
Perfect.
Great. Well, Steve and I have been together since 1993, so we're coming up on 14 years, I guess. And I joined his practice after selling my practice in Northwest Indiana that I was in for 5 years.
Now, John, your father was a dentist also.
That's correct. My dad was an orthodontist for 30 years in LaPorte, Indiana. And Steve and I joined forces in 93, and his practice at that point in time was on the north side of Indianapolis. We have since moved and built a new office in Fishers, Indiana, which is a northern suburb, and have been there for about 4 years. And during that period of time, Steve and I, we're just a great match as far as the partnership is concerned, and our practice grew very nicely. And so as we progressed through the years, we had a number of consultants into the practice, most recently just a few years ago, and enjoyed the benefits that brought to us. But we're always looking for a way to move our practice up to the next rung, and have been successful, I think, so far in doing so.
And we met you at Aesthetic Advantage.
That's right. You met Steve actually at Aesthetic Advantage.
That's
and
correct.
He came back to the office, and we talked about that particular experience. Steve, why don't you talk about that a minute?
Sure. That was the hands-on course here in Indianapolis, and Bill was the speaker on the final day of the second weekend, and I certainly had known of Bill through reputation and read articles and had heard him speak before. But that particular day was just interesting that I was very excited about what I had learned from the hands-on course, but what I came away buzzing about was what I had heard Bill talk about. And on that Monday, I met with John, and I said, you know, I think I just met the person that's going to take us to the next level.
Steve, what was it, I'm more curious about this, what was it that I said that perked your interest so much? Because that's always a tough day. As a matter of fact, I met with Larry Rosenthal on one morning for breakfast last week, and we were talking about that. They give me the last day when all of you have just submitted your final case, and you're all excited, and then big party the night before, and they put me on the next morning.
Well, number one, you're an excellent speaker, and very engaging. But number two, I was really interested in the fact that you were talked about getting the right team members on your team, mm-hmm. and everything from the profitability aspect of things to the proper work schedule that you talked about, and also, very honestly, the bonus system that you went into some detail on, because both John and I have always felt very strongly about sharing fairly with our team members in the success, and that's part of the enjoyment of doing what we do, but we had never found anything that really spoke to that really rewarded good hard effort in a fair and equitable way, that also treated the two guys that we think of the most ourselves, I think, when it comes to that. You know, we want to share in it too, so that was of keen interest to me.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit where your practice was, and I mean, you two were both certainly successful before you met Bill Blatchford, a little bit where you were, what you were looking for in a coach. I know you've both had some coaching, John in water skiing, and you, of course, a lot of coaching in basketball. I mean, you've worked with some of the top coaches in the country. I mean, Bobby Knight is your personal friend, and you were an All-American basketball player under Bobby Knight at Indiana. What were you looking for in a coach? What were you, and tell us a little bit about the difference between coaching and what you've experienced. And again, you've learned a lot from other consultants, and I'm not here to criticize. It's just a different style. The difference between coaching and consulting, perhaps.
Well, sure, and I think, and John can speak to this too, but we certainly were looking for, again, going to another level. And from the coaching standpoint, I think what we have found with working with you, and what we thought we were going to find anyway, but we've been pleasantly surprised by how involved you have become in talking to us about the complete package, and that is life outside of dentistry too, and creating an environment within our dental practice so that we may enjoy both our dentistry and our lives outside of that. And I think that we really have benefited from a lot of the things that you do that I know that some of the great coaches that I was able to work with do, and that's expose us to some things. Ask tough questions. Get you're honest, with us. That's what we were looking for, was somebody to look us in the eye and say, hey, you know what, guys? If you really want to be the very best, here's what you have to do. And some things you're just going to have to be ready, willing, and able to put your mind to what it is exactly you want, and then get the right team together and go after it. And so I think that you've been very helpful in that regard.
So it sounds like from time to time I've actually asked you to do some things that are a little uncomfortable.
Well, sure. I think there's nothing, as we've talked about, nothing immoral, unethical, anything along those lines, but a little uncomfortable, sure. There's some of that, once again, hearkening back to some of the things that Coach Bob Knight asked me to do, they were a little uncomfortable too, but they proved to be absolutely essential in ultimately leading to a successful team.
John, why don't you tell us a little bit, some specifics of what areas in your practice you wanted to improve when we came on, we got together. And what are some of the things? I mean, I'm not asking you to talk about numbers here. I will say that this is we're not going to really talk numbers here, because you may not want to share these, but this is a very successful practice. I mean, they're both successful. They were making good net incomes before. What are some of the improvements? Maybe you want to talk percentage-wise or something like that.
Actually, Steve would be better on the percentages, but I can tell you that that personally I was looking to expand the side of the practice, primarily dealing with our adult patients, and more specifically baby boomers that are probably my age and up. And the focus on more quadrant related type of dentistry, smile makeovers, more complete dentistry, was very interesting to us, because we'd had some success in that area, but we wanted to further expand that part of our practice and become a leader in the area in that kind of restorative dentistry. And with Blatchford Solutions, we've we found a way to get a team that coalesces together and understands that the goal here is to help the patient out and find what it is that they want. And your power questions are a classic example of that. And while it's been one of the more uncomfortable things that we've done, and that is all the practicing of these conversations with patients, this role-playing, we found that it's absolutely essential to do that, to ingrain it into our practice beings. And what it's resulted in is patient acceptance of suggested treatment, but more than that, and that is patients asking for treatment and wanting one of the two of us to do it.
Tell us a little bit about some of the changes you've made on the team. You've both mentioned the team as being important, and I certainly agree. You can't do this alone. What are some of the things that you've done in this year in selecting a team of people to get these results? Because I know your team is a little bit smaller today than it was when we started, and your production has gone up significantly. So what are some of the things that you have done that to create this wonderful team? And I do compliment you, and one of the reasons you're on this call is you were recently at a seminar. The first seminar they came to, they needed two tables to sit around. The last seminar, they all had their team, or they had their combined team around one table, and I just noticed a huge difference in the attention level of the team at this point and the enthusiasm that they had. So obviously there's some leadership that's changed, that they're clear about what they want, and what are some of the things that you've had to do to make this happen?
Well, Bill, I will tell you this, that this may sound somewhat simple on the surface, but you really made John and me take a good, honest look at ourselves and what do we really want to do for the rest of our dental lives.
So you really clarified vision and long-term goals.
Absolutely. Vision, long-term goals were absolutely essential in John and me being able to look at each other and say, you know what, it is time. Even though we have been successful, with, in a number of ways, and it's not that we in any way were greedy, but this was about quality of dental life as well as quality of life outside of dentistry. And we said, you know, who do we want to be working with every day? This is about going into the office every day and working with people we want to be around.
Yeah.
And, you know, and some of this that you talked about with having a fewer staff members, but the main thing is having the right staff members and having people that are motivated to be there. And
once you find that you have the right staff members, you discover that you don't need as many of them.
That's correct.
Yeah, absolutely.
How many staff did you have when we started?
We were as high as, at one point, as 14 or 15.
Between the two of you. And we've actually gone from staff to team. And so how many do you have now?
Eight. Yeah. And some of that was just, you know, we didn't just one day walk in and say, okay, you seven are off and you eight. You know, it took some soul searching to determine, you know, who was really with us. We talked with staff members individually, and some were ready to move on. We had one retire when really was confronted with the question, you know, how much are you willing to commit to this new program? And she came back the next day and said, you know what? I think it's just time for me to leave.
And I remember that. And so it wasn't this massive bloodletting. You didn't count off by twos and please pick up your pink slip.
Not at all. In fact, we got down to the eight people, but even at getting to the eight, we knew we had one person that was not the right person. So we searched for another person to replace that. So we got to the right number. We just still didn't have the right team members.
And so at this point, you talked about the quality of life a little bit, and you've both had lives like all the rest of people. You've had illnesses and all kinds of things going on in your lives. And what have you experienced as far as increasing the quality of your life?
Well, gosh, I'll answer on my part. The notion of block booking so that we have some predictable production happening first part of the day, and carrying that through the week. We see patients Monday through Thursday and a half day on Wednesday.
So you're working 3.5 days a week.
That's right. Although we spend Wednesday afternoons on staff meetings and BMWs and things like that.
Yes.
What it's allowed is a more systematic approach to treating patients in the office. And being able to check out at the end of Thursday and have a nice three-day weekend every weekend to get off to visit those family members that live out of town that you need to be with and spend time with your wife and kids and things like that, and it's just meant a lot. It's a whole lot.
So how much work are you taking home at night and on the weekends then?
I'm not going to speak for John, but I don't take any, and I don't think he does either.
Well, I was going to be a little bit more politically correct and say that I only take the books that Bill Blatchford
wrote. Well, there you go.
Well, that's good to hear, because that is one of my goals. I find so many dentists work, they put in their hard 4 days seeing patients, and then they take a lot of time, they take a lot of material home with them every night, and that's really one of my... That was literally one of the reasons I went into dentistry in the first place. I grew up on a dairy farm, and you know, you get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, you milk the cows, and then you work. Then you put in an 8 or 10 hour day, and then you milk the cows again. And you know, my family, when I was growing up, we took one vacation together, went to Yellowstone once, and that was the total of all the family vacations we ever took at one time, because somebody had to stay home and milk the cows. And so, one of the reasons I went into dentistry was. Because it's an 8 to 5. Now, obviously, as a business owner, you have to spend some time sometime, and I think that a lot of doctors spend a lot of time here and there during the day, and then they still take work home at night. And that's one of the things that I've really worked with clients to avoid, is to improve that quality of life so that, well, for one reason, I want your children to see that dentistry is such a great thing. And I see Dr. Niall Ursland is registered on the call tonight, and he is a client of ours from Alaska, and I know his son is either in dental school or getting ready to start dental school, and he obviously saw a fantastic lifestyle that Dr. Ursland had provided, and I want to be able to have the children of dentists look at dentistry and say, wow, this is a really nice thing. And yet I talked to so many dentists, and they said, I'd never let my child become a dentist. It's just hard work, and I think that's real sad. Niall, are you on the phone? He may not have
made it. Yes, I am.
Oh, now is your son starting dental school this fall?
He starts in the fall, and I was going to email you. He's going to Oregon Health Sciences.
Excellent.
I know your daughter's there.
Well, we'll have him get in touch with her for a few test files and things.
I should like that.
But you provided a nice lifestyle that he saw and said, "Hey, I want part of this." And that's exactly what my daughter went into dentistry is. She said, I like that lifestyle it provided. So I think the lifestyle is critical, and one of my philosophies is design the lifestyle first and then design a practice to support that. And that's really the order it needs to be.
Sure.
Well, can I make a comment? I don't want to butt in on your comment.
Go ahead.
My son went to college two reasons. He went there to play football and to go to medical school.
Uh-huh.
And he quit playing football because he couldn't keep his grades up and do the same thing. And then last year he came to me and said, Dad, I think I want to go to dental school.
Excellent.
And he said, because I think dentists enjoy their practices and life more. Made me proud. So I'll leave it at that and go on with what you're doing.
Excellent. So what are the things at the practice? Let's talk a little bit about lifestyle, but what are the things at the practice? You've mentioned block booking. You've talked a little bit about Shoot Select. You guys became the leaders again. You've mentioned that selecting the right team. What are some of the things that you've done that have impacted patients, have impacted your productivity?
Well, I think that we are much better at being now cross-trained, and so we can, from a patient perspective, we certainly have a more opportunity for one person to lead that patient through a wonderful experience, whether it be a new patient experience or they're for operative or a hygiene appointment. From start to finish, they can be with that one team member to check them in, walk them back, perform the services, and check them out, talk finances, we've got, amongst our team members, a higher, our dental IQ is higher now on all things that make a dental practice run smoothly. The hygienists are involved in a way that they've never been before.
Tell us what the hygienists are doing that they weren't doing before.
Oh, goodness. You know,
listening. Work on the mind.
Yeah, go ahead,
and
John.
Asking a lot of questions and getting getting answers that tell them what this patient is actually interested in. They're having conversations and getting to know these patients a little bit and finding out what it is that they're seeking in the office. And, you know, we have some conversations that are pretty short and sweet. And we have others that develop into questions and more curiosity, and it turns into an appointment for what we call a co-diagnosis and have more questions asked by the patient, answered by our really highly trained staff members, and team members. I can't say enough about our team members in that regard. But the hygienists in particular are initiating conversations amongst new patients as well as our patients of record, and it has resulted in a dramatic increase in the number of scheduled appointments for restorative.
And they're also, I believe, collecting money in the treatment rooms. And
that's correct.
Yes.
Even the hygienists are swiping credit cards. We don't have the POS terminals in the treatment rooms yet, but I can see a point where that's going to be necessary because it's more the norm than the exception these days.
So they're currently walking up. They're walking the 20 feet up to the front to swipe the card.
Sure.
That's right. They're walking that 20 feet.
But they're up there. But they're doing it.
They're doing it, and you know, if they need to take a phone call while they're up there, they're doing that as well. And it's just a part of life in our office now because we're running a little leaner. Everybody is looking for a way to back somebody else up and make the thing flow throughout the day.
And so everyone is able to make appointments. They're able to discuss money with patients. How hard was that to get the team to start discussing money with patients early on in the conversation as opposed to waiting until that final 5 minutes of what is often your last appointment?
Well, I think it, like so many teams, some people adapt to it quicker than others, or more comfortable with it than others. But through a series of, I think, our Wednesday team meetings and discussions, and also through just John and me coming to those meetings and saying, this is the way we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We're, you know, we took a stand that this is right. This is the way Steve and John want to practice dentistry for the rest of their dental lives. And we need you on board or not. And here are, you know, I don't want people picking and choosing what they like about Bill's program and what this makes them uncomfortable. It's, look, all of these great things are happening because we're paying attention to Bill, so let's do all of the things he's saying. You know, let's don't, hey, we like these 7 out of 10. More, they're more comfortable for us than the 3 out of 10 here that we don't like. No. He's given us 10 things to do. Let's do all 10.
And so part of it was the leadership that you took with the team, and you said, this is what we're going to do, and some people elected to not be part of that team, but that was their choice.
That was their choice, and those that, you know, have chosen to follow our vision, you know, certainly are thriving.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's do this. I would like to open this up to some questions. I know some of you on the call, and I'd like to have you ask some questions to Steve and John. I have some questions as well. I know that David Curry is on the phone. David works with me, and he has a question that a lot of doctors that he talks to about our program, some questions they have. David, what are some of the major questions that doctors ask, that you hear doctors asking, that either John or Steve might be able to answer?
Thank you, Dr. Bill. One of the issues that I hear repeatedly discussed among potential clients that would consider using Blastro Solutions is that there's a lot of emphasis on numbers. You know, I'm listening to both of these doctors speak about their profitability and the cross training. I'd just like to ask them from their perspective, how, and in the neighborhood and the region in which they practice, how many of the dentists that they are familiar with really know the cost involved in doing business, the cost per unit or the cost per hour, and also related to that, how many of their team members would know that number?
Well, I would dare say that there would be darn few dentists, and then obviously fewer yet team members that would know that. I will say this, that we have had a philosophy of sharing information with our team members even prior to meeting with Bill, but it has become certainly more meaningful with what we're doing now and sharing those numbers and making sure that, you know, again, we've got these motivated, enthusiastic team members that they're darn interested. They understand what falls to the bottom line now, and they understand what a bonus system's about and how before we start giving out bonus money, you know, we've got to earn a certain level in our cycles, and they understand that now, and they pay attention to that. But we do share the numbers that make those those things happen.
So your team then is completely aware of what the production, the collection, the overhead per hour. They know all those numbers.
They know those numbers. Yeah. And
well, I think it's important that anyone who's doing the scheduling, first off, how can someone schedule effectively unless they know what the overhead per hour is? Because there's a difference between scheduling for profit and scheduling just to put a name on all the lines. And unless they know those numbers, there's not much they can do except put a name on every line. And when every line is filled, they say, "Okay, done, doctor. Here, can do it." What is your staff typically bonusing? You've had ups and downs in your range, but what are they?
Sure.
What are they averaging?
Well, we've had John, you can speak to this too, but I think we've had as high as $1,500 to $1,600 per staff member, we've had a couple of cycles where we barely got there, I would say overall. Well, I will tell you this, that of the eight team members that we have, five of them were with us prior to joining with you, Bill. And we just went through an exercise here in January with those five people, comparing their 2005 compensation and time out of the office with the 2006. And we've been with you. We started with you in April of 2006, so
yes.
We didn't even have the first 3 months. And we had percentage increases for those five people as far as their compensation. The low was 10% more in dollars earned. The high was 34% increase for that young lady.
Excellent.
And by far, and John knows more about this on the actual time out of the office, that these gals had a low of three and a half weeks to a high of 5-plus weeks, I believe. Isn't that right, John?
Well, I was just going to say that the one thing that we have committed to each other to do is to not be the last and second to last on the list of people who've had time out of the office, or the most time out of the office. This next year, because that's what last year was. And so our commitment this year going forward, after looking at what our goals were for the year and the number of days we wanted to work, we marked out time for Dr. Green and Dr. Kluster to exceed the number of weeks our staff was taking.
Good.
Yeah, we got a little overzealous, baby. Well, no, we really didn't in the first year of this. It's just John and I always tell people that if Missouri is the show me state, Indiana is the show me that again state. and we John and I have never taken more than 2 weeks out of the office. You know, in 13 years we've been together, we looked at each other and said, "Oh my gosh," and I don't think, and we're talking 2 full weeks. You know, we've had days around holidays and maybe a week off here or there, spring break with our kids. But
what do you have scheduled for this year?
Gosh, John,
we have 4 full weeks out, and then we have an additional 2 weeks with the days around holidays and some days leading into an extra long weekend and things like that.
Well, you guys do learn a little slowly sometimes. Well, what are some questions from some of the participants that you might want to ask? I'm going to actually call and I'll let you just ask for questions from any of you to ask either John or Steve about this. And of course, I'm not going to call names because I don't know who is on the call. I have a list of the names who registered, but I don't know. What are some of the questions you can ask them about the style of coaching, perhaps, about what they have actually changed in their practice, maybe a percentage of increase in their net? I can tell you this, they're producing more dentistry today with half the team. So, and since they have bonused every pay period since we started the program, that means that their staff salary, staff compensation as a percentage of their gross is 20% or under. So they've raised their net considerably. Questions that somebody might have for them. Well, one of the questions I'd like to ask, what percentage of your net, what your net has gone up by what percentage, roughly?
Oh, gosh, Bill, I would say 11 to 13%. Well, of course, right off the bat, we decreased our staff, or excuse me, team, well, this used to be staff salaries, now team salaries, by 5%. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's 5% of a big number.
Yes.
You know, that we do. That was huge. Now we've kind of we've taken some of those dollars now, and we've started a campaign here January 1st, and this was per, again, our plan that we met with you and talked with you about. The long range plan was to put some bucks into marketing,
mm-hmm.
and so we're hitting it pretty heavy starting in January. So some of that those dollars are being fed right back into a marketing campaign.
Yes, I know you're working with Rocket Dog, and Rocket Dog in Seattle is one of our sponsors in this call tonight.
Yes.
What are some of the marketing things that you're doing?
Well, we, like so many bigger cities, we have the Indianapolis Monthly, a full-page ad there, and these are high-quality pictures of our actual smile makeover patients that, again, Rocket Dog organized that photo shoot, and certainly, you were instrumental in us, you know, going ahead and having these high quality photos. It does make a difference. It's very impressive, and so that started in January. And then there are a couple smaller magazines that are for our particular area, the Fishers Geist area, which is a pretty high end affluent area near us. So. The next thing will be a direct mail campaign, and we're working with Michael Elliott of Rocket.
And you've increased your web presence quite a bit as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Again, EZD has helped us there, and again, that's after having a conversation with you, we got in touch with them, and certainly have benefited from that too.
I know I've suggested to increase your networking in the community, and I suggested that you step up your involvement with the Pacers,
right.
Because Indianapolis has become quite an athletic town.
Sure,
especially in the last month.
Oh, no question. No,
are you going to have a commercial? Is Rocket Dog going to have you a commercial at the Super Bowl next year? Or
we're going to work on that. This is Michael. We'll work on that.
Yeah, I was going to say, if Michael's on top, that's close to the budget that he wants us to have for one of those 30-second ones, $2.3 million.
We may have you in the halftime show or something like that. There you go.
So you've stepped up some networking in the community as well.
Oh, sure, sure.
You've been out doing some speaking engagements.
Yeah, and I think John just did one last week, and I did one about 3 weeks ago. Actually, that was one that I hooked up with a facial plastic surgeon friend of mine, and I know we've talked about that too, that sometimes that's a good thing, sometimes not so much, because, you know, he's more in the head and neck, and, you know, folks, some of the smile makeovers that we're, you know, presenting to people are considerably more than what they would spend on, you know, some of his surgery techniques. However, we've had, good response from it. It was about 150 people that we had, you know, wine and a buffet and, you know, giveaways and that kind of thing, and had it at a nice country club and so things of that nature.
So you've done you had 150 people show up for an
sure.
evening. Find out about how it can improve their appearance and
absolutely.
Both plastic surgery and cosmetic dentistry. And
yes.
and those work really well if you can get a someone to help you put these on. We've had several doctors. I know this is a doctor from Hawaii on the phone, and we had a doctor in Honolulu a few years ago do one of these, and I attended it, and it was, he sat there, he actually had his staff at the meeting with their appointment book, and they were literally making appointments for consults at the program. And these programs do work. And one of the things that we talk about, and Michael Elliott from Rocket Dog does the same thing, is there's a lot more to marketing than just the advertising, just the media. I know you folks have done quite a bit as well as stepping up the image in the office, the way the staff dresses, the way just the way everybody presents themselves. Talk a little bit about what you do now in a new patient situation that's different from what you were doing before and what the results of that are. John, why don't you take that?
Well, I'll tell you, traditionally, we would schedule a new patient appointment strictly with the doctor. We might spend as much as 90 minutes with that patient, depending on what we discovered going in, but it might involve, you know, a full mouth series of films and periodontal charting and a full exam of hard and soft tissues and with, you know, replete with all kinds of dental terminology that confused the patient, I'm sure, and then a promise to get together in a week for a treatment consultation about all of our findings. And those treatment conferences were spotty as far as their success was concerned, because if you had
how much time did you spend in between the 90 minutes with the patient and then getting ready for the treatment conference?
You mean in preparation for the conference itself?
Yes.
Yeah, maybe an hour.
Uh-huh.
There wasn't a lot of prep time on that, but the problem was, in retrospect, we were not actually listening to what the patient was there to have us help them with. And now we're having new patients scheduled both with the doctors. If the telephone interview, which is crucial, again, by a key front desk staff member or anybody that's answering the telephone, being able to ask the proper questions to help the patient tell us what it is that we can help them with. It's all about listening and asking the right questions. And when that happens, a patient comes in to see the hygienist, we understand that they really want to have their teeth cleaned and want to get that started. But then the hygienist continues the relationship building so that we can determine what it is that patient really wants. And when you have a patient telling you what they want and you're listening and hearing that and writing it down, the treatment conference is a no-brainer. It's essentially, here's what you wanted, here's how we can give it to you, and here's how many appointments it takes, here's the fee. Schedule your appointment, and that's what we see happening.
Mm-hmm.
New patients are most commonly seen in the hygiene department and not in the doctor's chair.
So you would say that you went from 90-minute exam plus an hour getting ready for the plus the consult, so you may have had 2.5 to 3 hours invested in this patient. And,
right.
And what would you say you have invested in that patient at this time, time-wise, up until
a 60-minute appointment at which we're, of course, generating hygiene fees. And then possibly a 30-minute co-diagnosis appointment if that person is not ready to go from that hygiene appointment. They may have some questions and they want to, you know, maybe do some digital photography and things like that. So we'll spend the 20 or 30 minutes to get that information, at which time we'll continue to find out from that patient what it is that they are really after. So we have the 60-minute appointment as a new patient appointment, another 30-minute appointment with the doctor, and then we're treating.
And then, so the treatment is presented at that point along with the fee, and there's none of this. So the patient gets a chance to make a decision fairly on in this relationship. It's not expense of coming back a week later.
Some of the first questions that we will find out from the patient, in addition to what it is that we can help them with, what it is that we can do for them, is if they've ever thought about a budget.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, a lot of sort of open-ended questions that allow a patient to answer and actually forces them to answer with something besides a yes or a no, and will indicate what level of research they're at, you know, what their trigger points are, what is important to them. It'll also allow us to introduce the question of budget to the discussion early on so that a person that is not interested in a smile makeover can let us know early on so that we can address their issues, you know, appropriately.
So you're not trying to talk someone into something if they're not interested.
Exactly.
Yeah. In fact, Bill, today one of those in attendance at the seminar I was just telling you about with the plastic surgeon was in today for her complimentary consultation, if you will, and visited with Laura, one of our, you know, ace interviewers, if you will, and my involvement was about 5 minutes, and by the time I had gotten in the room, Laura had already reported to me, here's what we've discovered, had already talked budget, had already even thrown out $15,000 to $20,000, had gotten an affirmative from the patient that, hey, I don't care, I'm wanting to go ahead, you know, whatever it takes. So I walk into a room like that, you know, I got a little kind of a little skip in my step when I go into those that kind of feel pretty confident. And you know, I'm not in there having to, you know, to really grind away at this. It is about identifying what the patient wants. And sometimes, you know, we talk to them about a budget, and they say, oh, my gosh, there's just no way. And, again, we say, is that no way ever? Or is that no way but tell me a little bit more about it. And you know, it just that has helped with it. As John said, beforehand, we'd spend 90 minutes with them, wouldn't talk money at all, bring them back in a week. And in fact, we had been instructed to say at that second appointment, look, we'll be talking finances with you at the end of this treatment conference. So, you know, put that out of your mind right now. Don't worry about a thing. I want you just concentrating on, you know, the dentistry that we're going to present to you. And then hit them, you know, oh, boy, they were just excited. Gosh, oh, yeah, I'd love to do that. And then, what? It's that much?
Yeah.
And everybody has wasted time. We wasted the patient's time. We certainly wasted our time. And success was not, you know, our success.
Well, I think the other thing that happens and is that not only do you waste the patient's time, you end up embarrassing the patient.
Sure.
And you never see them again. And by doing this, and this is a major part, for those of you listening in, this is a major part of our training on case presentation, is to talk about money early. And we very often talk about money on the telephone with people, again, asking where they, it sounds like you've studied this quite a bit, where are you in your research? In other words, are you still considering whether or not to have this procedure done, or have you decided to have the procedure, and now you're shopping for a dentist? You know, what are you looking for? And very often, money comes up at this point, and we have clients that just right there, go right ahead and address, ask what their budget is, and that's if you find out. And if their budget is a few hundred dollars and they're talking about 10 units of Crown and Bridge in the anterior region, we might as well talk about it then. And this is a good time also to find out, as Steve said, well, what do you mean you couldn't spend that, you don't have it, or would you be interested to make payments? And, of course, this is where you can introduce Care Credit, who's one of the sponsors of tonight's call as well. And you can have those patients approved, a line of credit approved on the website, literally within moments, while the patient is still on the telephone in some cases. And so you can solve that. And by the time they come into the office, they already know that this is going to be a substantial investment, that they already have financing available. And it certainly makes any case presentation or any discussion of what you want real short, because we've spent a lot of time in the past trying to educate patients and thinking if we talk to them enough, they will buy the treatment. And, of course, the only thing they really want to know is how's this, you know, how am I going to look when it's done? How long will it take, and how much is it going to cost? And my premise for years has been it doesn't take a doctor very long to ask those questions and supply the answers to those questions. And the rest of it's just details. But a quote that I use that I helped that Steve and John have heard, and all my clients have heard, is that if you and I are going to do business, we'll work out the details. And I believe that's true. And if we're not going to do business, the details don't matter. And yet I see doctors and staff going in and spending hours talking to patients about details before the patient's even given a choice whether they want to do the treatment or not. And that's hours that if some of you are taking charts home at night and working up these treatment plans, that's time that you could be spending with your families or going out and playing a little bit, whatever it is you want to do in your spare time, rather than working up treatment plans. And I say that's just like doing architectural drawings by driving down the street and seeing a house that you think needs to be remodeled. And so you get an architect involved, and spend thousands of dollars on architectural drawings, then you walk up to the house and say, okay, I've got the plan for you. And then you try to educate them into submission.
Sure.
And that's literally what dentistry has done for years. And as a result of that, you know, the American public spends more money on big-screen TVs. They spend almost as much money on bottled water as they do on dentistry. So that system is not working real well. So we didn't have a whole lot to lose when we started changing it 20 years ago, or actually it was longer than that ago, I started to change this method. I started working on this clear back in 1974 when I was first exposed to some sales courses, and then I started to work with a psychiatrist for a couple of years. So this has been under development for about 30 years, and we're getting, and I won't say we're there, but we're certainly further down the road than we were 5 years ago or 10 years ago or even a couple of years ago. We've certainly improved it a lot, but that's what Steve and John are talking about here. Carol, you work with doctors quite a bit. I believe Carol Bogner, you're on the call.
Hey, Bill, by the way, and for those docs out there that listening in and wondering about this topic of money, this is the most respectful thing I think we can do for our patients. This isn't us telling patients, hey, we want to talk, about money here right off the bat because that's all we're interested in. No, we respect our patient enough to, like you said, not put him in that embarrassing situation later on.
That's
and,
right.
And it is really that, coupled with actually finding out what the patient wants, has just been such a wonderful thing for our practice.
I think it's the same relief that you have if you go to a realty office and you're looking for a home, and within a few moments the realtor will ask you, what is your price range or what is your budget? And when you tell them what your budget is, and of course they're trained, and I have a friend that does for realtors what I do for dentists, and he tells me that he trains people to always show homes that are approximately 20% higher than what you say your budget is. If you go 25 or 30, you're going to lose the sale. But if you go 20, people will generally do it. And most of us know from experience that's true, that most of us own that home that's 20% more than our budget. But at any rate, once they know what your budget is, they don't waste your time showing you something above or below your budget. And our younger daughter, Nathan's in dental school, the one who's a school teacher, got a real estate broker's license a few years ago. And she was working in Portland teaching full-time and selling real estate part-time. And she was 28 years old, and many of her patients, her potential clients would come in. And that was one of the first things that she and I talked about when we talked about, because, of course, she wanted, Dad, what can you tell me about selling real estate? And I said, well, selling's all the same. One of the things you want to find out early on is what is their budget. And, of course, many of her potential clients would come in, and they were in the, right out of college, 28 years old, newlyweds, entry-level jobs, and they were looking for starter homes in Portland in the $250,000 range, which amazes me that how much starter homes are these days. But she was doing that, and she would always ask the question, and then she had a couple come in that were referred to her by a friend, and she asked them what price range they were looking in, not making assumptions, just because they're 28 years old and just moved to Portland, and they were looking for something in the million two range. It kind of blew her away, but had she not asked that question, you see, she would have gone out and showed them $250,000 homes for a day, and they would have been insulted figured they'd wasted their time and they'd have just gone to some other realtor. So even in that field, you see, it pays to find out where people are and ask the question fairly early in the conversation. And that's where we picked this up and started using it in dentistry several years ago in talking to other salespeople, is you always find out what the budget is of the people who are your potential customers. And so, and we found that, yes, when you go to ask for a gift or go to buy a gift for someone, you ask, or the sales clerk will ask, what do you plan on spending before they start showing you things. So, again, to show you something in your price range, not above, not below. So it works well. And we have many offices, as I said, that actually do this on the telephone. And I listened to one office this summer. I was in the office, and it was Dr. Rise Ford's office up in Seattle, who I had in one of these A-book calls, and his receptionist, Maria, asked the question, where are you in your research? And the patient says, well, I want somebody with experience. And she says, well, Dr. Spohr has probably done more veneers than anyone in Seattle. And he did say that I've already made the decision. I'm going to have veneers on my teeth. And she said, and what else? And she said, well, I'm looking for someone that can show me actual photographs of work that he has done. And she says, well, you're going to love this, because Dr. Spohr teaches a course on photography to other dentists, and we have many photographs of literally hundreds of patients. And he said, of course, cost does enter the picture as well. And she said, well, it would be only fair to tell you at this point that Dr. Spohr is the highest in Seattle. And I can tell you this will be the highest estimate that you will get. And she has lots of confidence in her team and Dr. Spohr. And she said, what I want you to do, and he shared with her that he was looking at two other dentists as well. And in Seattle, he has a lot of top dentists to choose from. And he said, I'm looking at two other dentists. And she said, I want you to go to the other two offices first, get their estimates, and then I want you to come here before you make up your mind, and I promise you the experience will be different. You will see a difference. And that's the kind of thing that you can do when you get this out in the open instead of leaving it to the last possible moment. And that's a large part of, I believe, of our success with doctors, is teaching the entire team how to present dentistry in a way that people see the value. There are several things. You have to have vision from the leader, has to be clear. John and Steve have pointed out that they became clear how they wanted their life to be, and how the practice to support it. You have to put a team in place that wants that as badly as they want it, and you have to train them. You have to put systems in place, and you have to train, because putting people in and not training them, what typically happens is we hire someone, we don't train them, and then we hire them a helper. And the first thing you know is, in a partnership like this, you have 14 people working there, and all of a sudden you've got a nightmare on your hands, because you've got so many people putting in time and picking up a paycheck, and yet you can probably do it with half. And that's something that we see. If you have a chance, if you've read the A book, Playing Your A Game, mainly written by my wife, my name is on the cover as well, but she really wrote it, you will find that many of these teams are very small and getting incredible results. We had two doctors last year, single doctors that broke $3 million, and one did it with a team of four, one did it with a team of five. We have several teams in the 1.5 to 2 million range with three to four staff. We have those in the million range with three. We have those with in the 500 range. We have with two to three. There's an article in Dental Economics coming out on a young couple that I've been working with for a little over a year, and they started with us 8 months before they opened their doors, and husband and wife team, and they're both movie star good looking, and I'm real glad that they don't practice next door to me. But with one team member, one staff member, by the 10th month, they hit $115,000. They average 65 a month with one team member. So we tend to have smaller teams, and that seems to reduce a lot of stress, and even further than that, it makes practicing dentistry a lot more fun. And I think Steve or John, one of them, said it, a lot more fun going to work. And that's one of my premises that I would like to create in every office I work with, is a atmosphere of thank God it's Monday rather than thank God it's Friday. So Steve or John, either one of you want to add any last comments, or if anybody has a quick question, we're about just about out of time. We have about 5 minutes left.
Well, one of the important things that that you've talked about two or three times before we joined with you, but I heard you talk about, and that's retire as you go. And that's part of that happiness of just creating the environment that you, where you do want to go to work. And I think a lot of us in dentistry, and I was one of those, had always, my game plan was you'll work like heck, you know, year after year after year so that you can retire, you know, somewhere in the mid-50s. And it doesn't come true for near enough guys that do it that way. But as opposed to, wait a minute, let's create a nice balance here so that it's something that you can do for as long as you want to and sustain your lifestyle for as long as you want to and have enough time out of the office that you're always ready to go back in and also surround yourself with the proper team so that when you're there, you're enjoying what you're doing. And I think that's just been a huge thing for me personally.
Excellent. John, last comment.
Yeah, I will say echo what Steve said and say that that what we have learned over the course of the last not even a year yet has empowered our staff member. We know we spent a lot of time talking about bringing that financial question in early, but that is just one example amongst many that I could cite that has empowered our staff to I guess respond to the leadership that has been brought out in. Speaking personally, being brought out in me to help direct these team members in making this happen. They're empowered now and are anxious to get into the office and to make things happen, which in turn translates to both Steve and I and Steve and me. And we like going in on Mondays. We do feel that way. We're thankful for Thursday afternoon. Don't get me wrong, but Monday morning is a good thing.
Great. Well, I want to thank all of the doctors for being on the call. I want to thank John and Steve for giving up their evening to participate with you. One of our enrollers will be calling you or sending you an email or contacting you in some form or another. If you have any interest in the Blatchford coaching program or even just interested at the point to find out what we could do for you, and I emphasize the program is custom. It's designed to get what you want out of the program. We don't have an agenda that we try to make you into a model. We have many different practices, models available. I limit myself to about 50 clients a year. Also, I invite all of you to visit our website at blatchford.com. You can order the Play in Your A Game. The proceeds from that are going to the American, I started to say the American Diabetic Association. That's not true. It's the Juvenile Diabetic Research Foundation. Our younger daughter has developed type 1 diabetes at 29 years of age, and so we give some money to that. And we also give it to OSHU, which is the University of Oregon Dental School. And also we have the Blatchford Files, which is a monthly audio tape if you want me to ride to work with you every morning and I can role play with you on case presentation, for example. So I want to thank all of you for being on the call tonight and have a wonderful evening and hope to see some of you soon. Thank you.